What's up, guys? Welcome back to Shitpost. If it sounds a little different this week, it's because I'm on the road for Thanksgiving, like I assume most of you are. Joining the podcast this week, we have Claire Atkin. She's the co-founder of Check My Ads with Nandini Jami, who's been on the show. It was probably, last year or something? Anyway, Claire, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How's it going?
It's good. It's good. I am Canadian and have been watching everyone's Thanksgiving posts for the last 24 hours, and I'm so hungry for Thanksgiving food now.
Yeah, what's the Thanksgiving situation like in Canada? I'm afraid I'm completely ignorant about it.
Yeah, we just had it like a month ago because we're more northern, our harvest season ends sooner, but that doesn't stop me being hungry now.
Anyway, well, thanks for coming on the show. I wanted to talk about Check My Ads because there's been you guys are kind of stirring up some people that I kind of passively keep an eye on, namely Dan Bongino, and we'll talk about that for a second. But Check My Ads is you guys just launched a nonprofit, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So you guys are working, trying to educate people and educate companies about how ad tech works and, you know, using that as a vehicle to try to, I guess, kneecap some of the worst actors online and how they get money. But, you know, I am probably butchering that explanation, so I'll pass it to you. What is Check My Ads and why did you and Nandini start it?
So Check My Ads is founded on three things that we believe, three truths. So the first is that advertisers should be able to choose where their ads are placed, and that advertisers don't know where their ads are placed. And if they did know, they would not be sponsoring some of the most harmful websites on the internet, like, for instance, Dan Bongino's websites. So for the last year and a half, we've helped Fortune 500 companies stop funding hate speech and disinformation with their ad campaigns. And we did that with a for-profit agency that we built. But now we found that we were having the same conversation over and over again. So we decided to, instead of work with in-house team members from like comms departments, marketing, brand, and advertising within these Fortune 500 companies, we wanted to have a more efficient way to make change. So the most efficient way that we've found to make change is to basically uncover or sunlight the relationships that ad tech companies have with these disinformation sites. And this works because ad tech companies have what is called brand safety policies. Basically, they promise that a brand's ads will be kept away from being associated with harmful content. So when we let the public know that they're not doing that, they're not upholding their own brand safety policies, they usually make the call to fix the problem.
So you mentioned ad tech, and that is not a word that I think maybe, you know, your average layperson is familiar with. It was a term I even personally in my line of work hadn't really heard a lot about until probably a year ago. What is ad tech? And, you know, what is it? What isn't it? You know, what should people make of it? When they hear that term, what are we talking about here?
So ad tech is like the thing that has created the internet that we know today. It is every technology company that sits between an advertiser and a publisher. And together, these thousands of companies make up what we call a media supply chain. And it really is a chain. Like, these companies traffic in three things: ad creative, so like the ad image itself or video, money, and data about their audience. And advertising used to be a relationship between a brand and a publisher. But now all of these middle companies, these middlemen, sit between those two sides, and they make an incredible amount of decisions on behalf of the brand, on behalf of the advertiser, about where to send that creative, that money, and that data.
So how does that work? Say I am, you know, I am Joe Schmo and I have a company and I want to advertise online. Instead of going directly to a place like the New York Times, I would go to one of these companies, right?
Yeah, depending on your comfort with ad tech platforms, you would either go straight to them or to an ad agency. And that agency would then manage a dashboard for what's called a demand side provider, or basically the ad exchange on the advertiser side. And then that company would take the creative and the budget and the data and would send it through a series of other companies until it got to a publisher. I could go into depth about that, but basically, if you can imagine a chain or even a web of companies that just traffic in these three things, eventually those three things get to and from the publisher.
So that sounds pretty straightforward, but are there some misconceptions about it? I've seen a lot of reporting, particularly from Shoshana Wodinsky over at Gizmodo, mm-hmm. about how kind of convoluted and sketchy that whole industry is. Would you agree with, you know, that kind of take, or what should people know about this sort of, I would say it's a micro industry, but I also imagine there's like a ton of money in it, right?
Yeah. Okay. So Shoshana uses incredible adjectives to describe this, and I defer to her for the most colorful language. This is not a micro industry. This is a macro industry. We're talking $400 billion at least get trafficked every year just within the technology that is the advertising industry that upholds our internet. Also, This entire industry like upholds our internet. Like I cannot stress enough that it informs.
This is how the internet makes money, right?
it is how we get our media. It is why we have a disinformation crisis. It is the thing that makes the decisions on behalf of how we communicate with one another today.
So you mentioned misinformation, disinformation. How does ad tech factor into that equation? Because misinformation, disinformation, et cetera, is something that we talk a lot about on this show. You know, I'll have guests in, we'll go back and forth on it. How does ad tech play into this equation? There's obviously the, like, this is how they make money part of it, but does it go deeper than that? Or is it really like that core pillar?
Mm-hmm. You asked me what the biggest misconception about ad tech is. I think the biggest misconception is that they know what they're doing and they will do what they are saying they are doing. A lot of these companies we found will say one thing and do a completely other thing. And what we do at Check My Ads is uncover when that is happening. So how is the online industry related to disinfo? Quite literally. Ad tech companies have direct relationships with outlets that make money from radicalizing people, spreading hate, disinformation, fear-mongering, and they are really unscrupulous about it. I'll show you an example. So in April, the Director of National Intelligence, President Biden, and the U.S. Treasury very publicly, and this is rare, by the way, called out four outlets operated by Russian intelligence service for attempting to interfere in the 2020 U.S. presidential elections. And they placed sanctions on them. So sanctions mean that anyone who worked with any of these four outlets would risk 20 years in jail and heavy fines. So that's like all the advertisers, all the ad tech companies. Well, we found over 10 major ad tech companies, including like major ones like Google and Criteo, working with one of these outlets. And within a day of publishing that story, all 10 had dropped them. That outlet no longer had a way of making money on the American ad tech ecosystem. So that's how it's related. Like, they share bank accounts, they share contracts. It is direct.
Yeah, because there's also kind of the plausible deniability thing, right? Where it's like a ad server like Google is on God knows how many sites, but you know, through the course of my research and reporting throughout the years, it's, you know, I've kind of come to the conclusion that these companies actually do know, you know, who they are working with. A lot of the times it's like, when it comes to like payment processors and stuff, at least it's by law with like CYA laws or, KYC is what I'm thinking. Know your customer.
Know your
laws.
Customer.
Yeah. It's a Freudian slip there with cover your ass. But you know, would you agree with that? Like how much, I guess, like, consent should we assume that these companies have? Like, even a giant company like Google and stuff, how reasonable is it that they, like, really know where their services are being used? Should we assume that they do know?
Yeah, they know. I mean, Google just dropped the Gateway Pundit this year. The Gateway Pundit has been in operation for, I think, 12 years, and it is one of the most influential disinformation operations in America. And they dropped it after a French film company, a documentary filmmaking company, came to actually asked French Google what the deal was. They showed up with binders and they were like, this is what you're funding. And Google was like, oh, well, you know, it's a gray area, and like probably they're sneaking by and they don't let it be known to us that they're doing this stuff, and it's probably fraud. And this filmmaking company was like, but it's right there and it's been going on for 12 years. And like, there's no possible way you don't know about this website because it's enormous. And right before they published the documentary, Google dropped them finally. So they do know. I mean, they're just, the people making these decisions are not equipped to make the decisions.
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of reacting to like public pressure rather than some consistent set of principles. Takes me to Dan Bongino, who I can't believe has a single fan. I've tried to watch his stuff before, and this is just my personal take, but it's like, it's almost unwatchable. I don't know how this guy consistently has like top ranked Facebook content. Mm-hmm. But Check My Ads has been having a bit of a scuffle with Dan Bongino, right? Tell me about that, because it's like Nandini and I have known each other for a few years now, and it's very strange to see Dan Bongino like just absolutely losing his goddamn mind over her Twitter account.
Yeah, it's funny because I think you also know that Nandini is a dog person.
Right.
And he's been calling her a cat lady, which is like a misogynistic trope, for months now. And we're like, actually, it's...
How did that start?
I have no idea. So, okay, it started because... So, a quick background. We know that when ad tech drops a publication, that publication loses money. And we know that advertisers are the key to this. So the more advertisers who go public about an outlet being brand unsafe for them, the more likely an ad tech company will enforce their brand safety policy. So what happened was the Post Millennial is another disinformation outlet. It's out of Canada. It causes a lot of havoc. And it is a outlet that works with the Proud Boys and neo-Nazis. And I do not use that word carelessly.
Yeah, and some background for listeners. The Post-Millennial, if you've heard about it, it's probably because Andy Ngo is an editor at large there. So Andy being a vehicle for far-right propaganda, that is, you know, he brought his, and I almost hate to say it, his clout to the Post-Millennial. But that's some background there.
Yeah, so... Warby Parker, the beloved glasses company that gives away a free pair of glasses whenever you buy one, they found that they were on a email that the Post-Millennial, I think it was the Post-Millennial? Shit, now I'm not sure. Now I think it was actually the Daily Wire.
If I remember the saga right, it was the Daily Wire.
It was the Daily Wire. Darn it. Okay, so the Daily Wire sent a bunch of disinfo out about the Texas abortion law, and Nandini found Warby Parker on an email list that the Daily Wire had put out, right next to really callous content about the abortion law. And so she tweeted at Warby Parker and said, "Hey, did you intend this?" And Warby Parker immediately was like, "Absolutely not." And the Daily Wire's buddy, Dan Bongino, got really upset about this and said, this is a question of free speech, basically implying that anyone who says anything deserves advertising. And
Yeah, that famous First Amendment clause. You know, you have the right to say whatever you want and also to make money from a glasses company while you do it.
So what happened is he, on camera and on audio, sicked all of his listeners on Warby Parker and on Nandini. So Warby Parker's customer service reps got an avalanche of hate and abuse. They said, you know, they were baby killers and just horrible stuff. And then Dan Bongino, in his explanation of what was happening, said, oh, this is Nardini Jammy, and she's obviously a cat lady. She has six or seven cats. He said, we know this. We know she has six or seven cats.
Might want to hire better researchers, Dan.
He said she's some kind of fact checker, so you know he hates fact checkers. And
I mean, this really just speaks to the integrity of the whole operation. Nandini, the famous cat person.
Not Nandini, Nardini. And anyway, it was racist and it was misogynistic and it was all these things. And then over the course of the last couple months, he and the postmillennial, now this is where the postmillennial comes in, have published. Somewhere between 4 and 5 disinformation articles about how Check My Ads is, and I quote heavily, a criminal operation, how we are backed by George Soros, which is, of course, an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that runs rampant in these circles. And
of all the progressive funders in the world, it's always that guy. I wonder why they focus on that guy so much.
And then he said that, and then Dan Bongino and the Postmillennial said that we were being anti-Semitic because there's a Jewish man who works at the Postmillennial who was in a screenshot where Nandini talked about how they work with neo-Nazis. And so there's so much that is published in, that has been published in bad faith. And we have received the highest level of rape and death threats ever on our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and email. And it has been uproarious.
Jeez. It's kind of weird, right? Because you would think that reacting that way would kind of demonstrate to other would-be advertisers exactly why they don't want to be involved in this.
Oh my God,
Has that played out? I mean, like, have other... I mean, it's impossible to know, like, what is going on in the room in some of these other advertising agencies. But since this meltdown has started, I think the anti-Semitic thing is like the most disgusting element of all of this. But like, has it resulted in even more blowback? It kind of feels like, from the outside looking in, it kind of looks like they're just digging themselves into a hole.
Mm-hmm. This is exactly what Breitbart did in 2016. They decided to boycott Kellogg's after Kellogg's blocked them. And that just made every other advertiser flee. And we think that is what is happening with Dan Bongino. But actually, that question uncovers the whole problem, which is that it's very hard to tell. We rely on the ad tech companies to tell us who they work with. And we are waiting to see what is really happening. We know that one company dropped them just a couple days ago. And what often happens in these scenarios is that a ton of advertisers will just quietly block it because they don't want to be attacked. So they're just going to quietly sort of inch away from danbongino.com and bonginoreport.com as it becomes increasingly abusive and brand unsafe.
So when a company or publication or, well, I mean, I guess they're both, but like something like the Bongino Report or the Postmillennial, when they lose their ads, what exactly does that do? I mean, obviously ads are how they make some of their money, but is it more than that? I mean, and that's not to minimize it, right? You know, I've, like, losing access to advertiser dollars is a huge deal. But are there any other effects that losing an advertiser has on a publication?
Yes. So I won't go into the whole story, but We know that when Nandini ran Sleeping Giants back in 2016, she was letting advertisers know, by the way, when their ads were on Breitbart.com, which was at the time an incredibly influential site. Within 3 months of letting advertisers know they were there, over 4,000 of them blocked Breitbart from their ad campaigns, and 31 of Breitbart's 34 ad exchanges decided to drop it. So Steve Bannon, wow, who was their editor-in-chief at the time, himself said that their expected revenue for 2017 had been $8 million, and it dropped to 10% of that because so many people blocked them. So Breitbart, wow, lost 90% of their funding, and that stopped them from expanding to Europe, which had been in their plans. And I mean, we know today it is not in the news as much anymore. It has largely fallen off the map. So,
right.
So they lose money, of course. Advertisers also give prestige to outlets. And when you end up with no advertisers, you kind of end up as like Newsmax. Like, people just don't really pay attention to you. Because, of course, that like brand equity goes both ways, right? So they lose prestige. And the other thing they lose is data. So if you remember, I said these ad tech companies traffic in creative, money, and data. That data is an integral part of any propaganda outfit. And by the way, this is why the ad tech conversation is not just a conversation about advertisers' rights. It's not even just a conversation about public safety. This is a question of national security at this point. So when you are running a propaganda outfit, data on your audience is incredibly valuable. So what they lose is all of the data relationships, that sort of bundling of data, the banking of data that ad tech allows them to do. They actually lose that ability as well to share in traffic data. And we like that a lot.
Yeah, that seems like a great chess piece to take off the board. you know, especially considering like how aggressive these outlets often are on platforms like Facebook. You know, cutting off that data seems like a huge deal. Well, as we're, you know, starting our descent here towards the end of the podcast, you know, I wanted to ask you, because this is, you know, on this show, a lot of the time we talk about like what the problems are and sort of where things are going wrong. But I wanted to end this one on kind of an optimistic note. And I wanted to ask you, like, what a better future looks like in this space with ad tech and these propaganda outlets, and what makes you hopeful about getting to that future?
Wonderful. Okay, so a better future is one where our advertising industry reflects the interests of advertisers. Sounds basic, but that helps.
Yeah, what does that mean? What do you mean when you say that?
So right now, that media supply chain that I described at the beginning, that all of them are making hundreds and thousands of decisions about where advertisers' brands should go. And we think that advertisers should have a lot more control than they do in that process. So when advertisers can choose where they want to be, what happens is they end up funding the news, surprise, surprise, and staying away from disinformation outlets. The problem is that choice has been co-opted by ad tech. And if we return it, if we return control to advertisers, Nandini's and my hypothesis is that the market could be corrected in that way. It's sort of, I mean, right now it's like a lemon market, right? So we need, we don't know when, as marketers, we don't know when we're buying trash versus when we're buying something good. We just have high level KPIs. We think that transparency will help a lot. And I want to note on the optimism side, there is a lot of important discussion about Facebook right now. Facebook amplifies an incredible amount of disinformation, of fear-mongering, bigotry, violence. But Facebook is not where disinformation outlets make money. Most major publishers of disinformation only make money when users click on the links from Facebook and go to the website.
Yeah, they're not getting a paycheck from Facebook, right?
Most of the time, that is true, yeah. And so that is where we can make a difference. It's at the websites themselves. It's at the ad tech that runs on the websites themselves. And because of that, I'm optimistic that we can defund the disinformation ecosystem, the disinformation economy. And that to me is incredibly exciting. We can do something.
Yeah, something that makes me optimistic is whenever I see Check My Ads doing an awareness campaign or Nandini, you know, reaching out to brands and being like, whoa, did you know that you're on this site? Like, what gives me hope is that we are still at a point where most brands and companies will look at the situation and just go, oh, shit, yeah, no thanks, we're out. That's like a glimmer of hope on the horizon, I think, which is that, you know, this stuff is toxic. And even just at the gut level, like companies understand that it's toxic. And maybe that will generate some momentum to, you know, help us get to the other side of it. Mm-hmm. You know, what does mission accomplished look like here? To borrow the worst George W. Bush press conference of all time. is there going to be a point where Check My Ads, like, you know, one of the like cliche lines that I spit to people with my like extremism research is, in a perfect world, my job wouldn't have to exist. Mm-hmm. Is there a perfect world where Check My Ads doesn't have to exist?
Yeah, where Nandini and I can just go back to being regular old marketers and copywriters.
Yeah, you know, cat people.
Mission accomplished to me looks like an ad tech industry that is accountable to the people and accountable to their clients. And we have launched Check My Ads as the first watchdog for the ad tech industry, specifically for that purpose. We believe that the entire industry should have integrity, and right now it doesn't. So we will be continuing this job. Our first mission is to dismantle the disinformation economy. And if we have to continue our work after that, we will. We are not going away anytime soon. And this is just the beginning.
So how can people learn more about Check My Ads or even get involved? I think that, you know, this sort of angle of public awareness and activism is really important. It does something that, you know, I'll often talk with people about, which is, you know, try to counter the actual disinformation or hate speech or whatever itself. And that's certainly an important part of the equation. But there is always something that like makes it possible. You know, there is infrastructure involved. Like, the reason you're getting a post-millennial or Dan Bongino thing in your feed to begin with is because a lot of people along the way have like either agreed with this and enabled it, or simply were indifferent towards it. And most people actually don't want to answer for it. So like with that model of, you know, activism and stuff, you know, where can people go to learn more about that or maybe help you guys out while you're doing it?
Thank you for asking. Check My Ads is a nonprofit, and we have a membership program for supporters. That support directly funds research and reporting that we do. And we are lean and efficient. So you should know all of that money goes directly to putting in the time to uncover the relationships between ad tech and disinformation. So you can support that research at checkmyads.org, and you can subscribe to our newsletter branded at checkmyads.org/branded. Every couple of weeks, we uncover more information about how exactly ad tech funds disinformation and hate speech. And every time we do that, I am so proud to tell you that things change. We see these wins every time, and to me, that is, it's the thing that keeps me going. I don't know if this fight is winnable, but I do know that I can do something to build momentum towards a world that I want to live in, towards a media ecosystem that reflects our society's values. And to me, that is incredibly exciting. So thank you so much for asking that question.
Yeah, it's the same with my line of work. You know, will I ever eliminate extremism from the face of the planet? Probably not, but it's a fight worth fighting.
Yeah.
Claire, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking about Check My Ads and what you guys are about and what you're up to. But because this is Shitpost and you're on the podcast with a cuss word in its name, I have to ask the non-serious last question. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
I'm so sorry. It's the Libby app.
What's that? I'm not familiar.
Okay, so you're welcome in advance. The Libby app is almost every library in America has a Libby app associated with it. So you sign into the Libby app, Libby, and you sign in with your library card, and then the universe of audiobooks is available to you for free.
So it's just like a library card for audiobooks?
It's you use your regular library card and then you get audiobooks. Or if you want to read books on your phone, you can do that too. But I am a proponent of libraries. I get really excited about access to the world's knowledge. And this is one way that we can read more, interact more with the kind of quality content that we should be paying attention to. And so I just love the Libby app so much. I use it all the time.
Yeah, less Bongino Report, more William Faulkner. Mm. What are you reading right now? Or listening to right now, I guess.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm listening to a lot of stuff. I just finished A Burning by Megha Mazumdar, and it was very good. I'm actually reading physical books right now. One of them is called How to Take Smart Notes, which is an academic book about writing nonfiction, and it's wonderful. And then the other book that I'm reading is, it's heavy, it's scary. It's called This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends by Nicole Pearl Roth, and it's very well done.
Cool. Well, Claire, thanks so much for coming on Shitpost, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Jared.